1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On the Friday edition of the program, the White Sox are the best team in baseball. We'll explain why in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Mark Schanowski, the Bulls insider at Stadium and a sports reporter at ABC7 Chicago. We talk with him about his new job at ABC7, some Bulls news, and what to expect from them come this offseason. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Before we start today, I have to tell you about State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. A lot of our listeners have gone to him for all their insurance needs, and he's been very helpful in getting them the coverage they deserve. There's no games with Brian. Just here to help and make sure you feel safe. So if you have insurance needs and you haven't called them yet, what are you waiting for? Dial up the number, 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or find them online at ryanismyagent.com. That's ryanismyagent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. If you're new to the program or new to the channel, I am a very hard person to please. Maybe that's a fault. Maybe I expect too much from these Chicago teams. But I do believe in my position, I should hold people accountable. For those of you who watch me for Bears coverage, how many times did I hold Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy, Bears management accountable last year, even this year too? How many times have I said to trust the plan with the Bulls, to wait and see about the Cubs, and lean towards a rebuild? I've always told you the facts. I've never lied to you. And to some, that's construed as I'm too hard to please. I'm not a real fan. I should be more optimistic. Well, I'm here to tell you today, and finally, there's one team in Chicago that's genuinely pleased me, that I'm genuinely happy about. A team in which all around, I really don't have much bad to say, if any. They have proven everybody, not just me, that they are a World Series contender. They are the best team in baseball. 1-9 in their lineup is impeccable. And yes, their manager is a Hall of Famer. I'm talking about the Chicago White Sox. You know, I've heard people ask me, oh, you're a Sox fan. You're a Sox homer. No, I'm not. I grew up a Cubs fan. Now, today, I have no loyalty to anybody. This is purely fact-based. Those of you who are Cubs fans are certainly happy with what they're doing right now. But if you went head-to-head and you had to pick Cubs or White Sox, who's the better team right now? Hands down, it's the Sox. And it really isn't even close. I want you to take a look at their starting lineup. They only have one player with an OPS plus under 100, which means everybody in their lineup is an above-average hitter in baseball. Some of them elite. You mean Mercedes, Jose Abreu, Yoan Moncada. All of them elite. We're talking about OPS Plus is above 130. That's elite. That's 30% to 40% better than the average player in the league. And usually, if it's around 150, you're talking about MVP. Jose Abreu's at 142, by the way. Only player on the team with double-digit home runs, 46 RBI. I think he's on pace to potentially repeat as an MVP right now. Tell me I'm wrong. He's put up the right numbers. Started off slow, but he's recovering. If that batting average could get up to 290 again, which I think it will, he'll be okay. He deserves to win another MVP in a full year. No COVID, so nobody could say, oh, last year was a fluke. No, Jose Abreu has always been consistent. I've been impressed with what he's done in his entire career so far. It's a shame he came here so late, didn't debut till he was 27. If he could somehow keep this up, I could see a Hall of Fame appearance. I'm not kidding. If this trend continues, it's been 8 years, if this could continue for another 5 or 6, it could happen. Besides, seeing who they elect today, why not put in Abreu? He's meant so much to this one team. Franchise lifer. And the numbers he's put up are always commendable. Rookie of the Year, MVP, I believe eventually, World Series. There is no reason why he should not be a Hall of Famer right now, barring injury or unforeseen circumstances. Even Yasmani Grandal, who's still hitting a .131, has an OPS plus above 100. He's still somewhat producing. Might be slumping, but that doesn't mean he's been totally unproductive. Tim Anderson, Nick Madrigal, hitting above 290. Yermín Mercedes, above 300. Still, Billy Hamilton has turned it on a bit. I love this lineup. This is, to me, the best lineup in baseball. And if you disagree, show me a better one. Show me another lineup that has 8 out of their 9 hitters with an OPS plus above 100. I dare you. You can't. Unless you're talking about the All-Star game. Unless you're talking about the AL All-Star team or the NL All-Star team, there is not one lineup in baseball that has those numbers. Not one. They're indisputable. Now word from our sponsor, True Classic Tees. Are you tired of boxy t-shirts that just won't get the job done? What about ones that feel too big and uncomfortable? I have that problem a lot, especially as a taller person. Thanks to True Classic Tees, though, those problems are over. See, I'm wearing one right now. Very comfortable, double-stitched for endurance, and custom-made to fit your dimensions. And get this, a portion of every sale goes towards helping homeless veterans get off the streets. So you're helping out our veterans, and you're buying quality material. Listeners of this program get a discount to use JON10, that's J-O-N-10, to get 10% off your next purchase. Go to TrueClassicTees.com or find the link in the description of this video. True Classic Tees, top clothing and a good cause. And you look at the rotation. I understand not everybody is perfect yet. Dallas Keuchel's ERA is a bit high. Giolito's is coming down, and 3.73, very respectable. But how about Carlos Rodon and Lance Lynn? You know, it's so funny. I remember some White Sox fans who did not like the Lance Lynn signing. Oh, he's too much of an old-school pitcher. All he does is eat up innings. Right. And now he wins. And now his ERA is 1.37. Remember that week in the offseason when the Sox acquired Lance Lynn and signed Adam Eaton? I did a video on it. Go back and look. I said these two moves prove they're a contender now. They're spending money. Oh, not enough money. Well, how have those two moves worked so far? Maybe not Eaton, but definitely Lance Lynn. I don't care that he's 34. I don't care that he's not a brand name, household name. He's a hell of a pitcher. Been around the game for so long, since 2011. Always known to be a workhorse. Past 2 years, top 10 finishes in the Cy Young Award voting, too. He's never done that before. I mean, here's a guy who actually still throws 200 innings. I understand not important anymore to many people. It's important to me. Eating up innings, very important to me. I love a 200-inning pitcher. If I could find one anywhere, I'll take it. I don't care if his ERA is 4, whatever it might be, bring him in. He will conserve your bullpen. He has good endurance and stamina. And when the times get tough, he'll be there in the playoffs. Lynn could be counted on to go 7 innings per start, not 5 or 4, then be taken out. That's very valuable. Extremely valuable. Look at Carlos Rodon, too. 1.98 ERA for a guy who wasn't even supposed to come back. Was essentially told, we don't want you, but we'll take you back anyways. He was non-tender. The Sox blatantly said, we don't want you anymore. And he came back on a team-friendly deal, and now he's a Cy Young Award candidate. 80 strikeouts in 54 innings. 5-2 record. ERA under 2. He is a legitimate Cy Young Award candidate. Same with Lynn. Two Cy Young Award caliber pitchers. When Giolito comes back, that's 3. Keuchel, good innings eater. And Dylan Cease, the young gun, doing well. Outstanding rotation. We're not even talking about, by the way, Kopech, who just got hurt. And yes, finally, the closing position has been settled. Remember what I said back in April when the Sox were 8-9 and Liam Hendricks' ERA was like 5? I said, don't worry. I know who Liam Hendricks is. This will not continue. Liam Hendricks was a former starter, turned bullpen piece, and in Oakland was actually a setup man before becoming a closer. He pitched 86 innings in 2019. He's known to be a workhorse, already at 31 now. He'll probably pitch at least 70 innings out of the bullpen in the regular season. And he hasn't missed a beat. Yes, he's had issues early on, but now his ERA is 2.05. That's exactly what you want. That's why you paid him. 13 saves, 2.05 ERA, eats up innings, ERA plus of 2.02, so 102% better than league average. That's what you need. That's why you signed him. The setup man role is a bit of an issue right now. Aaron Bummer, Jose Ruiz, Cody Hewer, Evan Marshall. That will get better with time, I believe. There's still time to work out those kinks and find the right 7-8-9 combo. There's time to do it. Because remember, it's only June 1st, June 2nd. There's still time here. We know who this team is now. Now it's time to smooth out any potential rough patches moving forward. The rest of the year should be dedicated to winning as many games as possible and smoothing out any potential problems. So that way they don't happen in the postseason. That's the way it has to be done. But I have to say, I'm genuinely in love with this team. Their production has been more than I even expected. 33-22, 96% chance to make the postseason, 13% to win the World Series this year. Remember, this is their first full year in which they've expected to be contenders. Last year, because of COVID, it wasn't. So even if they don't win it all, this is just the beginning. Wait till next year, the year after that, another year. You've got 3 to 5 years right now to do something if you're Chicago. It's year one, essentially, year one. So if nothing happens now, I guarantee you something will happen soon. And I've just been shocked, really, at how dominant they've been. Their Pythagorean win-loss is 36-19. Now that's based off run differential. The Sox have a plus 80 run differential. I mean, how is that possible? Plus 80. Plus 80. They dominate their opponents. And it makes sense when you have a rotation that gives up very little runs, and you have an offense that has everybody with an OPS plus above 100, you're putting up runs every night. It truly is a shocking turn to see how dominant this team is. I'm still shocked. I'm very surprised. I didn't expect it to be this early. I thought we'd have to wait till later in the year or even next year to fully see this team emerge and to see all their potential on the field. We're seeing it now, daily. Yes, I know they had a couple of tough losses. Here's the real deal. They're still 2.5 games up. They still lead the division. Tony La Russa hasn't shot himself in the foot too much, despite what critics want you to believe. And the team is playing well. There is nothing to be worried about. Here's an article, by the way, from the Chicago Sun-Times. A Pythagorean examination of Tony La Russa. White Sox have 3 fewer wins than their runs for / against projection suggests, but it's nothing abnormal. Quote, a 32-20 record through Sunday, just a game behind the MLB leading 34-20 records of the Padres and Rays, hasn't halted critics of White Sox manager Tony La Russa. It's normal to be a few games above or below the Pythagorean projection. I want you to understand this for a second. The Sox are winning, doing great. Everyone's performing, no real issues. Critics are still finding a way to tear them down. By the Pythagorean projection, we have people. Still, it's June. Doesn't matter. Everybody is reaching for something. They're trying desperately to find a way to tear him down. And it's just so annoying. Can't you be happy about this? Can't you be excited for this team? Do you have to sit here and still tear down the manager? We get it. For the last time, we get it. You didn't want him. But you can't argue with their record and where they are. And I'll just say this, just to make it clear for everybody. If you're honestly complaining that your manager is winning you games, or trying to find ways to tear him down because he's not the guy you wanted, he's not new school, analytics, young, go root for another team. I'm not joking. Don't get out of here. Leave. The criticism and the slander has been ridiculous. I'm not talking about his private life. I'm talking about on the field, between the baselines, every game. There's really nothing to complain about. Unless you find something to complain about. You could actively look, and if you actively look, you will find something insignificant like this Pythagorean thing. Oh, the Sox should be 36-19, not their current record. So those 3 games were because of La Russa. I mean, if you're going to go to that extent, and who are you as a fan? It's okay to hold people accountable. I said that to open up this show. You know me. I hold everybody accountable. But you have to give people praise if they're doing something right. You have to admit, well, they're winning. Good job. Not reach for the same branch time and time again. I'd understand it if they were 500 right now. That would be a concern. I'd say fire him. But they're winning. They're continuing to win. There's no reason to complain about them. And those of you who continue to find ways, I suggest you enjoy this. I mean, is that too much to ask? That you enjoy this run? That really, for the first time since 2008, you're a hell of a baseball team? And for the first time since 2005, you're a real World Series contender? Isn't that enough? Is there more that I'm missing? Just enjoy it. If they start dropping games, go on a 10-game losing streak, you'd have every right to be critical and to sit here and say, bad manager. But even after your mean Mercedes incident, the unwritten rules, what's happened to the team? Nothing. They're still winning. They're unfazed by media coverage. Like critics, they are a close-knit group inside the clubhouse. Enjoy it. Celebrate it. This is a damn good baseball team. Let's acknowledge it sometimes. Sometimes. I understand if you're like me and you're a pessimist, you're a critic, you want to know what the truth is, you're hard to please, but this team is delivered on every level. The one thing I can maybe complain about is how Adam Eaton isn't hitting. And that's an individual thing, not a team-wide thing. This entire team is performing. Everybody is performing. The manager's winning games. He hasn't gotten in the way. Celebrate that. Cherish it. Enjoy this reign of baseball supremacy here in Chicago. Sure, the Cubs are a fun story. But you don't see me talking about them all day. You've heard what I've said about them. I don't believe in them. Great story. Don't believe in them. This is a team I believe in. This is a team I know is going to be right near the World Series this year and for the years to come. So let's all acknowledge that together. Let's stop reaching for petty complaints that mean nothing. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Mark Schanowski comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $250 free to bet on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. Must be 21 plus. Must be an Illinois resident. You can bet $250 free on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. Cubs and White Sox are back. NBA playoffs going strong, plus the NHL and Bears prop bets. This is, without question, the best time to put down some money and win a whole lot more back. sportstalkchicago.com/cash, sportstalkchicago.com/cash. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports Talk Chicago. Here with John Zaglul, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's a Bulls insider at Stadium, sports reporter at ABC 7, and the host of the Gimme the Hot Sauce podcast with Stacey King. Please welcome Mark Schanowski to the program. Mark, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm great, John. Great to be back with you.
So, Mark, what's your evaluation of the Bulls season to start?
It was, I think, a little bit of a disappointment. You know, with Billy Donovan coming in the new front office, the hope was that they could make a run at one of the playoff spots in the Eastern Conference, or at least get into that play-in tournament. And unfortunately, there were a lot of things that went wrong along the way. They had players miss time because of COVID. Then they made the big trade, which really kind of changed the whole approach in terms of their style of play on the offensive end. And as they were going through that learning curve, then Zach LaVine went out for 11 games because of the COVID protocols, and that really kind of put them behind the eight ball. They went on a losing streak, which pretty much knocked them out of the play-in tournament. But, you know, at least the foundation now is set for what this team is going to look like going forward. They have two all-star caliber players in Nikola Vucevic and Zach LaVine, and they're going to build around those guys. I would expect Arturis Karnišević is going to be extremely aggressive this summer in trying to get the right pieces around those two. And I think when training camp opens in late September, they're going to have a team that is going to be definitely a contender for a playoff spot next season.
Did the trade actually help them or hurt them this year? Because you mentioned the learning curve was an issue.
I think short term it definitely hurt them because they were a team that was playing one of the youngest rosters in the NBA, and they were playing at one of the fastest paces in the league. But then all of a sudden you bring in a player like Vucevic, who is averaging close to 24 points a game and is an accomplished low post scorer. And Billy Donovan, with really no practice time because of the condensed schedule, had to try to change the offense on the fly. They ended up moving Daniel Tyson to the starting lineup, so they're almost going with a Twin Towers lineup, and they were trying to run their offense through Vucevic in the post. And it was a change for Zach LaVine. It was a change for Kobe White and basically just about every player on the roster. And I think that because there was such limited practice time this year, they never were really to get comfortable with what they were trying to do on both ends of the court. And I think it kind of set them back a little bit. Now, when you make a trade for an all-star caliber player, if one becomes available like Vucevic did, you know, you have to be aggressive and you have to pounce and try to figure it out later. Unfortunately, in this instance, especially with Zach missing those games, it wasn't good enough to get them to the playoffs. But I think that if you'd ask Arturis if he would do it again, he would say absolutely.
Were they a playoff caliber team on paper, at least?
I'm not sure exactly if that's accurate or not. I mean, I think that they had the pieces that look like, if you just take each one of them separately, you know, there's some pretty good players. But in basketball, like in any other team sport, it's all about chemistry and having that continuity with your roster. And unfortunately, the Bulls didn't have that. That's why I think this summer, where, you know, some of the guys will get to play summer league, you know, in terms of Patrick Williams and some of the other young guys, and then you'll have to get a full training camp to implement Billy Donovan's offense and really get comfortable with the things Vucevic does. And there's also the chance that during the summer they may go out and aggressively pursue what they consider a starting caliber point guard, and then that would be another new piece to work in. So this team desperately is in need of practice time and a full training camp to see what they can be with the various pieces on the roster.
Mark Schanowski here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, is Coby White then not going to be the next point guard for the Bulls?
I think Coby White showed the front office and the coaching staff over the last 20 or so games when he moved back into the starting lineup that he does have more potential as a lead guard than what maybe they thought. I think even though he's only 21 years old and 2 years in the league, he had kind of already been pigeonholed as a sixth man, Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams type, that, you know, maybe his ceiling wasn't going to be as a starting point guard in the league. And I think that he showed during the time that Zach was out, yes, his scoring totals grew, but also he was more effective as a playmaker. His assist numbers jumped as well, and he was able to cut down on his turnovers. His splits were very good over the last 20 to 25 games when he moved back into the starting lineup. And I think he might have opened some eyes with Billy Donovan and Maurice Cheeks and the rest of the coaching staff that, you know, maybe we should stick with this guy and see if he can work. You know, there had been so much speculation during the season. I know we talked about it last time about the possibility of acquiring Lonzo Ball. I don't think that's something that's going to happen. I think that during the trade deadline, they first approached New Orleans about a potential sign and trade, not a sign and trade, but involving two guys who were going to be restricted free agents at the end of the year, that being Lauri Markkanen for Lonzo Ball. And the Pelicans wanted a sweetener, and the Bulls decided that they were going to trade those future number ones to Orlando in the Vucevic deal. So Arturas was working different trade scenarios at the same time, and it turned out that the Vucevic thing became something they could get done. He pounced on that, and the Lonzo thing kind of fell by the wayside. You know, Ball is going to be a restricted free agent this summer, looking for a long-term contract in the neighborhood of $20 million per season. And that's pretty rich when you consider the numbers that he's put up so far in his career. I think the Bulls would like a point guard like that, but I don't think they're going to be in position to get into a bidding war, especially when you look at their cap situation, which is not terrible, but it's not great either.
Who could they then sign or bring in that situation?
Well, I think that most of the guys that the fan base would be excited about would be high-ticket items. You know, you could go for the Chris Paul-type fix like they had in Phoenix. Obviously, that's been one of the big stories in the playoffs with the Suns knocking off the Lakers and sending them home in round one. Chris Paul, coming in as a veteran, was able to bring out the best in Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, and that entire roster. And, you know, the Utah Jazz are moving on to the second round in the West. Mike Conley, their point guard, is going to be a free agent. He could be a guy that might want to re-enter the market and try to improve his financial situation. But, you know, he's in his mid-30s now, and I can't see the Bulls being a team that's going to break the bank. And for a veteran like Conley, his first-year contract would start at something close to $40 million, which means you'd have to get rid of a number of players on the roster to get to that number. I just think that it's going to be very difficult to add in a guy that is going to be that much better than Coby White. Bulls fans, I'm sure, will think about, well, what about Derrick Rose? He's a free agent again. But I think it's kind of the been there, done that with the Bulls organization. And plus, he played so well for Tom Thibodeau. The Knicks have a mountain of cap space. I think the Knicks will do right by Derrick and offer him a very attractive contract this summer.
What's your take on Zach LaVine and his situation?
I think that the Bulls will talk to his representatives and see if they can get that early extension done. The problem is, because of salary cap rules, Zach would have to give them a hometown discount to take that extension. And in some of the comments he's made, even though he loves Chicago, he loves the Bulls organization, he's made it clear that he expects to be paid whatever the market will bear. So my guess is that this is going to go into next summer. Zach will play out the last year of his contract, become an unrestricted free agent, and then the Bulls will have to, convince him that this is the best situation. Obviously, since he's their own free agent, they can offer him an extra year and higher percentage raises, which means the total financial package would be greater. And if they make the playoffs next year and Zach is happy with his experience, hopefully it'll be a situation where you know, he wants to stay in Chicago and play as, you know, the rest of his career here. But, you know, it's I think it's very much to be determined. I think it's kind of unlikely they'll be able to work out an early extension with Zach.
How impressed were you by his overall growth this year?
I was very impressed. I thought that he showed some amazing progress in a lot of different areas. Now, people say he's a bad defensive player. I wouldn't say he's a bad defensive player. I think at times his focus drifts a little bit. He's vulnerable to those weak side cuts when he's kind of ball watching. But I think that in terms of being an on-the-ball defender, you know, he's pretty solid. And I think that when you look at what he did offensively, his numbers were almost historic. I forget the exact list, but he was on a list with players like Kevin Durant and Larry Bird for guys that were able to shoot 50, 40, 80% and shoot, you know, average over 25 points a game, which is a pretty impressive list. I thought that Zach really showed a lot of growth in a lot of areas, and I think that that's going to continue in the next season.
How much of that has to do with Billy Donovan, and how much of it has to do with Zach maturing as a player?
I think Billy was a good coach for him. You know, I think that one of the things that he'd like to do was do private little film studies with guys and show them things they were doing well and things that they were doing not so well. And I think that his style was much better than when Jim Boylan was in and was trying to kind of crack the whip and really show tough love to these guys. I think that, you know, the modern NBA player responds better to positive reinforcement than they do to somebody yelling at him all the time. And I think that Zach really liked Billy Donovan's coaching style. And at the same point, you know, you look at that coaching staff and with Billy Donovan, who was an accomplished point guard in college, and then Maurice Cheeks, who's a Hall of Fame player, I think they were able to show Zach some of the areas where he could improve in terms of being a facilitator, not always looking for his own shot and trying to make sure that he was scoring his points, but also to find his teammates when they had advantageous matchups. And I thought Zach did a nice job at times of running the offense and getting the ball to other guys. You know, the label that he was a selfish player, an empty stats guy, I think that's gradually going away. But until he can get the Bulls into the playoffs, the Zach detractors will always, you know, kind of fall back on the fact that he's never been to the playoffs, never had a winning season, and you know, they'll label him a losing player.
Are you a Zach detractor?
No, I'm not. I like Zach. I think that, you know, I've enjoyed my conversations with him. I know he's committed to winning. When you look at the workouts that he puts himself through during the summer, I mean, the guy is all basketball. And, you know, for anybody who thinks that, you know, he doesn't care about winning, they are badly mistaken. I mean, this is a guy that unfortunately throughout his career has been put on a lot of rebuilding in a lot of rebuilding situations with very little veteran help. And now the roster's starting to take shape where, you know, you've got a guy like Thaddeus Young coming off a great year who has one more year left on his deal. They bring in another all-star in Vucevic. Hopefully they can find a way to bring Daniel Theis back as well. And then all of a sudden he's got some veteran help and everything doesn't fall on his shoulders to be the guy that's got to score 30 every day and take all the tough shots when the shot clock is running down.
Mark Shinowski here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, is Lauri Markkanen returning?
I would say it's pretty unlikely. You know, he and his agent are going to be looking for a contract that's probably too rich for the Bulls' blood. When you look back at what happened after the Vucevic trade, after just one game, Billy Donovan decided that Vucevic and Lauri Markkanen were not a good pairing together in the starting lineup, and he moved Lauri to the bench. And then not only that, but because of the fact he had Theis and Thaddeus Young at the four, he told Lauri, well, you're going to be my backup small forward at 7'1". So Lauri, who's not a great defensive player to start with, was forced to guard some of the quickest players in the league, and that was a bad matchup for him. He was also playing reduced minutes, so his numbers were dropping in all categories, which is a horrible thing for a guy heading into restricted free agency. The one positive for Lowry's camp is that so many teams were freeing up cap space, anticipating a big free agent class in 2021, which will not be that way because of all the stars that signed extensions with their current teams. A guy like Markkanen may become more attractive to a team that has a lot of cap space and won't be able to hold it over into next season because of the roster that they have. So he may find that he may still get a good contract. I just don't think it's going to come from the Bulls. If someone offers Lowry $18 million a year for 4 years, I think the Bulls would just say, well, you know, it's been nice knowing you. Go ahead and good luck in your new situation.
Why did he regress so much? I mean, we remember his second year in the league, did great, 19 points per game, really looked like he turned a corner. Now today he's at his worst. Why do you think that is?
I don't know that his game regressed as much as I think expectations grew to an unrealistic level. As you mentioned, during his second season, he had that famous month of February where he averaged 26 points and 12 rebounds a game. And everyone kind of looked at the fact that he was an athletic seven-footer who could shoot the ball from long distance and said, this guy's going to be a future all-star in the league. Well, when it didn't happen because of injuries and roster composition and a lot of different things, and the fact he didn't develop as well as people thought, everyone started to think that, you know, Lauri Markkanen is a bust. And I think the truth is somewhere in between. I think that expectations grew because, you know, the fan base was desperately looking for the next star, the next guy that could carry the Bulls to contention in the Eastern Conference, and they thought that maybe Lauri could be that guy. And he's a quiet kid. You know, he's a family man now at age 23, and, you know, he has a lot of responsibilities off the court that, you know, I mentioned Zach's drive, and I'm not saying that Lauri isn't motivated, but I think that he does not have that motor that runs as high as some other NBA players. And I think that, you know, he has to take a look in the mirror this summer and decide how good does he really want to be. And I think that the motivation for a lot of professional athletes when they go to a new team is that brings out the best and makes them understand that why didn't it work in the last place? I have to make sure it works this next time around. And there's been a lot of speculation that maybe the Spurs would be interested. And, you know, the Spurs is definitely a team first, share the wealth offense that I think Lauri might have a chance to thrive in.
Did the coaching changes play a role at all in how Markkanen ended up?
No, I don't think so. I think that Billy was trying to get the most out of him, just like Fred Hoiberg and Jim Boylan were. I think that with Lauri, he's had a lot of injuries during his four-year career. He had more injuries last season. He also missed some games because of the COVID protocols. You know, he had a fluke shoulder injury that knocked him out for a long period of time. And, you know, when he came back, as I mentioned, the trade happened and he was asked to play small forward. So, you know, timing is everything for professional athletes and being in the right situation. And I think for a number of series of circumstances, it just didn't work out for Lauri. And, you know, hopefully when he gets to his next team, he will find that right situation, a point guard that will kind of look out for him and make sure he gets the ball in areas where he can be effective. And I think that Lauri can still be a very productive player in the league. I just think with the Bulls' current roster composition and the fact that they've kind of made their bed with trying to build around Vucevic and Levine, that I think it's pretty unlikely they'll invest major dollars in bringing Lauri back.
For the Bulls then for next year, what's their lineup look like if you were to guess right now?
Well, I think what they'll probably try to do is move Patrick Williams to the power forward position, let him start there. I think he's more comfortable playing against the bigger athletes rather than chasing smaller guys on the perimeter. I think they'll try to pursue a shooter to either start at that number at that small forward spot or at least be a heavy minutes guy there. And then obviously it'd be Kobe and Zach in the backcourt with Vucevic at center, maybe backed up by Daniel Tice if they can bring him back.
Are they a playoff team with that composition?
You know, it really just depends on the continuity that I talked about, that what they can get in training camp and find a system that works that's built around Vucevic and Zach. I think they need more shooting. I think that was one of the areas that they were lacking in. You know, if you could get a guy like a Duncan Robinson, who's a free agent in Miami, put him in at the three position to just to play off of Zach and Kobe and Vucevic, I think that would be the kind of guy that would be really good in that starting lineup. And then off the bench, Troy Brown, who showed some promise as a defensive wing, could be used off the bench. You'd have Tice if you could bring him back. And, you know, I think Thad Young will be back. I don't know about Sato. I think that they may decline their player option on Sato just to free up some cap space. You know, they'll have to fill out the roster with some minimum salary guys and maybe some undrafted rookie free agents. I still have some hopes that maybe Devon Dotson can develop as a backup point guard. And, you know, we'll see how they're able to round out the back end of the roster. But I think they're probably going to go for more shooting rather than a starting caliber point guard. But then AK plays his cards close to the vest, so it's really hard to figure exactly what he's thinking. He may go out in free agency and sign Kyle Lowry. I mean, who knows? He surprised us with the Vucevic trade, and I'm sure there'll be more surprises in store this summer.
Let me ask you this. When could you see the Bulls become a legitimate finals contender?
Well, it's all about development of their young guys. Patrick Williams, you know, when he came into the league and got off to a nice start, you know, he started all but one game for the Bulls this season. People were saying he was baby Kawhi and he's a future all-star and he had the physical traits to be a future, you know, an all-star in the league. Well, you know, his numbers are very modest, but he's only a 19-year-old rookie who was a fourth or fifth option in the offense. And if he can develop into a, I'm not saying necessarily an all-star, but a upper caliber starting NBA four, I think that would really help them a lot. If Kobe White can develop into an above average NBA point guard, and Zach and Vucevic continue to be all-star caliber players, well, then you have the makings of a really nice starting lineup. And if you can have veterans like Tice and Thaddeus Young, and maybe develop a young point guard to back up Kobe, I think that, you know, that's a team that can make the playoffs. And if Patrick Williams really does develop into a star, well, then you have a team that can be a team that can go deep into the playoffs in the East.
More to come with Mark Schanowski in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Mark Schanowski, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, your new role at ABC 7, how'd it come up?
Well, that was a very interesting set of circumstances. You know, I assume when Mark Giangreco left the station that they were going to search the country far and wide to try to find the next Mark, which is impossible because he's the best in the business. But, you know, I thought that they were going to go on a nationwide search and bring in a young talent to complement Jim Rose and Deion Miller, who are currently on staff. But because of the pandemic and because of some budget realities and businesses all across the country, they decided, at least at this point, that they didn't want to do that, that they were looking for someone that could fill in part-time, you know, anchor some shows when either Jim or Deion are on vacation, and maybe do a little reporting as well. And at this point in my career, that was something that was very attractive to me. I had a couple of discussions with the news director there, and we decided that let's give it a go. So I started over the Memorial Day weekend anchoring the sports. I covered some Bears at OTAs this past Wednesday, and I'll just kind of fill in where needed, and it'll be fun to compliment what Jim and Deion are doing. They're enormously talented professionals, and I just feel very fortunate to be part of that, because when I came to Chicago in 1990, I started out at ABC 7, and I was there for 8 years and got to know a lot of great people. Most of them, of course, aren't there anymore, but there are still a few that I know from my stay there. And it's the number one rated television station in Chicago for news, and I just feel very blessed to be able to contribute in any way I can.
Did you ever expect to return there?
No, I mean, the reality of the business is normally when you leave a place, it's pretty unlikely to return. I mean, we see in professional sports occasionally where an athlete will come back later in their career to the team they started with or had some past experiences with. But it doesn't normally work that way in broadcasting. So that's why, you know, I'm especially grateful that, you know, station management decided that it would be something that they thought would be a good fit as well, because it would have been easy to say whether it was because I had been there before or, you know, my age, that maybe it wasn't a good fit. But they liked my experience in the market and the fact that they knew that I could easily step in and seamlessly handle whatever assignments were thrown my way.
What's your favorite part about being back in TV?
You know, just being back doing the shows last week, just the excitement of putting together a show. You know, I've done that through the bulk of my career, and it is more challenging on the local news level in the fact that you're only getting three and a half minutes. So every decision you make in terms of how long of a lead-in you write or how many highlights you're going to show for a particular story is going to impact what else you can include in your sportscast. So there really is an art form to that. And that's one of the things that I know that Mark Giangreco was a master at, in terms of getting the most out of that three and a half minutes and always leaving people with a laugh. And, you know, I got a chance to work with Mark for a few years when I was at Channel 7 the first time. And I just marveled at his creativity and his ability to craft incredibly entertaining shows every night. And Mark and I remain great friends. And I know that he's doing some things that he's really enjoying right now, getting a chance to enjoy his semi-retirement and spending more time with his family and a lot of old friends he has in the business. And he was very supportive of me taking this opportunity. And it's been fun so far, and I look forward to seeing how it develops over time. You know, during this past year and a half of the pandemic, there really hasn't been much in the way of reporting on local teams. Everything's been interviews via Zoom, and most of the ballparks have been kind of closed off. Of course, no access to clubhouses or locker rooms. And with the NFL going to 100% capacity for their games, and now it looks like baseball is going to be doing that as well in a lot of markets, including Chicago, maybe those locker rooms will start to open up again, and there will be an opportunity to do more on-field or on-court reporting for these teams, which you know, might make it make my role a little bit bigger as time rolls along.
Are you concerned that things won't be the same as before?
Well, I think that a lot of professional organizations, especially in the NFL, they're very motivated to try to control the message. You know, they want to make sure that the fan base sees them in the most positive light, and they want to make sure that they're controlling the narrative on what the storylines that are surrounding the team. I'm sure there are a lot of professional organizations that are really enjoying the fact that these Zoom press conferences are 100% controlled. You know, the media relations people can call on the reporters that they want to ask the questions and maybe avoid the ones that they don't want to call on. And I think that that way they can present the players that they want, who they're confident are going to express things in the most positive terms. And they can really kind of control the narrative. And I think that even with things opening up, I think a lot of pro sports teams will be slow to go back to the old way. And we may never see full access to locker rooms and clubhouses like we did before for reporters.
And Mark, before we finish up today, last question, what's the funniest moment that you've had on Give Me the Hot Sauce?
Well, the best show we had so far was when we had B.J. Armstrong on. Of course, B.J. was drafted the same year as Stacy, and they became close friends because of that shared experiences. They had to go through the rookie hazing and all the things that you have to pass through in terms of developing as an NBA player. So they had a very close relationship. And, you know, BJ always has that very youthful look on his face. You know, I'm not sure exactly how old BJ is now. He's about to be right around 50, and yet he still looks like, you know, he could play. He's still got that youthful look. And so we had him on the podcast, which we also record on Zoom and feature on YouTube. So as we're doing the show, you know, you know the setup, you got the boxes of everybody on screen. And as they were telling stories about their experiences, BJ just couldn't stop laughing. And then they were telling a story about Robin Ficker, who was the famous heckler in the Washington Bullets days, reading from the Sam Smith to Jordan rules while they were sitting on the bench and reading passages, and how they just couldn't stop laughing, and how Phil Jackson got so angry. And BJ was laughing so hard, there were tears coming down his face. So, you know, just to see an athlete let loose like that and see, you know, the genuine love and respect that he and Stacy had for each other, and just them recounting their experiences and having to go through, you know, being young guys on a championship team, which is not an easy thing for anybody, was just hilarious. And Stacy is such a master storyteller. When he tells stories about his youth growing up in Oklahoma, and, you know, telling stories about playground battles and, you know, experiences in his home with his older brothers and stuff. It's just, it's so personal, and it's so funny that there isn't a time where we finish taping where we just don't say to each other, wow, that was a lot of fun. And that's why, you know, we're hoping that more people will sample the show, and if they have the opportunity to watch it on YouTube, because it's more fun to watch Stacy's expressions and the way he weaves his stories. You know, the podcast form is great when you're driving in your car or maybe exercising and you just want to listen. But if you get a chance to watch Give Me the Hot Sauce on YouTube, I strongly encourage you to do it, because I guarantee you, you're going to have a few laughs along the way.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining me as always. Great talk, and best wishes, of course, at ABC and for the Bulls moving forward when you cover them. Thank you so much.
John, my pleasure. Keep doing the great work with the show, and I'm happy for all your success and look forward to talking to you again down the road.
Great talk there with Mark Schanowski, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Mark Schanowski himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTalbert, Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No! Here are the turtles!